Welcome to the Index Podcast, hosted by Alex Kahaya. Plug in as we explore new frontiers with Web3 and the decentralized future.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Index, brought to you by The Graph, where we talk with the entrepreneurs building the next wave of the internet. We do this because we believe that people are worth knowing. We believe in telling their stories so that you can learn why they are here pushing for a better future. Today, I'm excited to welcome Michelle Munson, CEO of Illuvio, where she's built what's called the Content Fabric. This is not an understatement when I say this. The Content Fabric is the most advanced content delivery technology on the internet. It is super cool, and I'm very happy to have Michelle here to share more about what they're building at Illuvio. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alex. Very excited.
So let's start at the beginning. Tell me how you got here doing what you're doing. I know that before Illuvio, you were invented and like worked on some similar technology. I kind of want to go all the way back because it sets the stage of like why you're here. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I've been working in content over the internet most of my, I'll call it durable life. After grad school, I got into the startup era that was beginning of CDNs. I ended up starting a company in 2003 called Aspera, which created a, at that time, a solution for transporting bulk data like heavy video and whatnot over long-haul internet networks much faster and more efficiently than standard TCP. And it was an application software, so you could run it on top of standard TCP IP networks. It was really a thing of its time. It ended up being adopted quite widely for video file transfer, genomics data transfer, and across quite a few industries. And over the course of 14 or so years, I built up that company with our core team. We ultimately sold that company to IBM. In the duration of that, video changed radically over the internet. And along with just the way it was being done, it became from in the very beginning of Aspera, there weren't even streaming services like we think of today. Our first major customer at Aspera was Apple iTunes, actually. They were introduced to our technology to basically solve the problems between business-to-business file transfers at that time. And if you think about where video was on the internet then, I mean, you were just beginning to see what became this giant consumer economy around streaming content. And over, 2003 to 2015, 16, 17, we all know what happened. And we ended up with not only a lot of video being most of the bytes on the internet, but we also ended up with the entire sort of internet ecosystem being sort of centered around the currency of content. And then the biggest players grew up to either directly deal in video like YouTube, or they use video as a sort of means to their bigger ends, like Apple does today to sell their devices, or Amazon does today to get you on their Prime subscriptions. And the reason I'm saying all this is because during that time, this whole, not just the supply chain, but the economics of that, we felt like called for a different sort of clean slate approach that would think of video differently. I mean, for one thing, really make it possible for it to be hyper efficient. Another thing, to take away this sort of assumed dominance of the intermediary platform between the publisher and the audience. And then I think finally, to sort of unlock the fact that you could use decentralized blockchain technology to directly own and monetize the content. That kind of brings us probably to the next question you'll ask me, which is why this thing called the Content Fabric, and what does it have to do really with media on the blockchain? So
That is exactly my next question. But I think content delivery networks is what a CDN stands for. And it is literally like what gets the pixels to your screen. And the Content Fabric is something kind of similar, but it's got like Web3 values infused into it. So expand on that. Like, you're getting pixels to screen, but in a way that like is more about the future of the internet, which is Web3.
Yeah. How does that work? Yeah. So first of all, the Content Fabric's a utility blockchain. So it's a full blockchain network. And what I mean by that is everything that happens in it is organized through a blockchain. And we actually wrote the software as a fork of standard Ethereum. with a content portion of the Content Fabric protocol is also fully decentralized. And the main idea of it is that the network has all the capability through the software to be able to not only store the content assets and to give secure ownership, but also to be able to dynamically generate, like programmable smart contracts allow us to do, for example, to dynamically generate the content from its source. And that happens in the protocol. It also derives directly from the blockchain security. One of the other, I think, sort of big takeaways in the fabric as compared to traditional CDN networks is that everything inside of that network ends up being an object that can create and serve its own outputs. And all of those individual components or parts are not actually duplicated as they are moving through the network and as they're stored. And that gives it efficiency that we don't have in traditional CDNs. For example, to cut through the chase, I mean, its carbon footprint rise 50 times more efficient than you would think of in a typical streaming network. And then along with that, it also ensures that all of that content's ownership is actually native to the content itself. So people in blockchain understand this very well, because the whole notion of blockchains is that we can have not only direct ownership ourselves, but that any transaction that we have with the other party is from us to that party. Same thing happens when content objects create new outputs. So for example, if you go buy something that I publish onto the Content Fabric, the offering from the object that you're consuming is, number one, owned directly by you. You're authorized based on your address. And then all the mechanics that actually serve that output to you are governed by actual contracts that are part of each object. So to boil it all down, it's both a blockchain and it's also a decentralized content storage and streaming network.
I mean, it's amazing. What's interesting too about it is the economics of the network help it grow, right? So
that's
the more
exactly
content
right.
that needs to be delivered, the more people are going to want to put down the pipes, the physical infrastructure that needs to be there. And this is something I've become kind of obsessed about since like 2016, got into the space, like the actual physical infrastructure of the network. And there's a lot of things at play. It's like this decentralized economy around content delivery that you guys have built is actually what's going to fund the pipes, the physical infrastructure. Let's just give people a concrete example. We could use this podcast as an example. Like, I could upload the entire video of this recording of the show to the fabric and have it distributed across the entire, and anybody who wants to like host it and show it could show it, and I would get paid for that if it's monetized, right?
So that's exactly right. And I want to add one more point to this. So first of all, the whole idea of the protocol is that when you publish, it's available. Your podcast is available to any authorized user to consume on demand. That's never been done before. That's sort of just in time. And then the second is what you got at, Alex, which is the fact that you can then really exploit the contract veracity of the content to extend that with things like stakeholder payments. And for example, we have a stakeholder contract that allows for anyone who owns into that object to get paid. So for example, when you're publishing and I'm listening, my listen, for example, can actually pay you and anyone else that is involved in that publishing process. It's a lot of technology, and there's no doubt that it weaves many things together. It's something that's become quite mature and has huge utility. And now we're starting to get into some really interesting first-of-a-kind media on blockchain projects that use it.
Yeah, I think it's really incredible. Like, people need content. Right. And there are people, the creators out there who produce this content all the time. And I think that right now, like, all that content is kind of siloed and owned by Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, right? And like TikTok, like, I use all these platforms for this show, and I have to upload the assets individually every time to every show, which is really annoying. And then on top of that, I don't own those channels. Like, they can just shut me down, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly it. And I think blockchain folks, this is a sort of a step, I think, of understanding for the whole community, is that folks really expect to be able to own in their assets, be they non-fungible tokens or cryptocurrency that they hold. Why is that not also true for their digital assets, what they create? And the point of the Content Fabric is to bring those principles directly into the content itself. And this is really important if you look at the gigantic monetization of media. I mean, almost all the money on the internet is made around media content, one way or another. It's either direct by selling it to you or just having you subscribe to it, or indirect by advertising on the back of it. And I think this is the real deeper insight to sort of change things for the better. Finally, is the audience, right? The audience is always a pawn and all of that in traditional social media. Everybody knows they're tracked and traced. And fortunately, it's getting harder and harder to actually scale that because privacy laws have gotten stricter. But we could solve all of it just by having users signing on with their wallets. And one thing I wanted to mention about this, I mean, our main end user application is our media wallet, which is a full crypto wallet, full EVM signer, compatible with MetaMask signing, that also gives you authorization to, you know, enjoy and stream your content that's on the fabric that you own.
So it's your identity.
Is this also your media wallet, meaning where you can experience it? It's both, right? It's your crypto signer, your identity, and your media experience.
I've been thinking about this a lot, like the network effects that content can create and the applications that you need in order to get the audience, right? To reach the audience. How are you guys looking at that problem? Because you are a protocol. You have the pipes to get to the end users, but then you need people to like actually display the content using your technical stack, right? So you can build the apps or you can get partners to do it. So like walk me through how you're approaching that issue.
So it's such a great question because we're a pure technology platform. At the lowest level, the fabric is a mainnet blockchain. You can actually go to the RPC interfaces, query those just like mainnet Ethereum and get back the same API responses you do for any other EVM network. It's also a network of nodes that run the software protocol as any other blockchain, some of which do content fabric functions, some of which do block validation, right? Then you've got on top of that a way to make it useful to creators. And we ended up as Alluvio, the company, building an API layer that lets publishers basically publish their content, set it up for tokenized authorization, be it on our chain or cross chain, media wallets that allow you to consume the media. And we just released one of those for tvOS. This is first time to do that on the TVs in addition to the browser. And then the last piece around that is what you would call the tooling to have your own kind of brandable marketplaces, storefronts, white labeled, you know, video stores and otherwise tokenized media experiences, live streaming events, for example. That's what we've done to commercialize this for creators big and small. One of the biggest challenges, and I think you nailed it, is that this is a whole new model for people because it really allows for direct distribution from the publisher to the audience. And it opens up so many new possibilities, which also lead to lots and lots of experiments as how to best use it. And we have some projects that are very famous that have done super interesting things, like the Dolly Parton live stream, for example, during South by Southwest on the platform, to this latest stuff with the movies from Warner Brothers, such as The Flash that just released. And then a lot of independent projects that are, for instance, live streams that are just done by singers, for example. We've had multiple live streaming shows that are basically streamed through the fabric and ticketed through the facilities of that API layer, which is basically all blockchain-based ticketing. It's a range of different use cases. And I think the biggest and most important thing of all is to, for us as technologies, to keep growing the capabilities of the platform for people and then to have people experiment and adopt, right? And I think we're very much the early stages of that.
I think like awareness is a really big issue, right? Like creators who are active on, again, Instagram, TikTok right now, for one, they don't realize until it's a problem, right? They don't realize until their account gets shut down that this is a big deal, that they don't actually own the content they're creating or the audience. Like they can't just port it to some other app. You're starting to see, you know, things like Alluvio. I think I saw like somebody who runs like Threads or Instagram even talking about doing something like this where like, you can take your audience with you. I mean, Blue Sky, right? Jack Dorsey's thing, this idea of like portable audiences. And I think like creators are just becoming aware of the fact that this is even possible.
Yeah, there's also the bigger issue, I think, even beyond audience portability is profitability, right? Everybody knows that it's extremely difficult to make money with creative work unless you have super scale. And even the super scale companies are having trouble with this right now. You've everybody seen how difficult it is to make money off of streaming. And one of the big problems underneath that is there just isn't the efficiency in a platform to let people have smaller audiences and still make a profit. And one of the great things about the fabric is that it makes that possible. You can actually have, you know, a smaller fan base and still have a profitable distribution. Along with that, I think you can also magnify that super fan base. And one thing we've just discovered as we've been doing these movie releases, I wasn't sure if it was true, but it seems to be in the data, that you can actually have a super fan group that is distinguished from everybody else, that spends more, actually spends more dollars, and also engages more with that content. And you can know who those people are based on their wallet addresses. And then from there, there are, as I'm sure most of your listeners can think of, an unlimited set of possibilities for how you can really grow and cultivate that super fan base. The problem with traditional media platforms like social is, number one, how do you ever know who those people are? You don't. Two, how do you establish any direct and portable relationship with those people that you can further incentivize and grow on, right? And three, you don't keep your profits, right? Not to mention the fact that the way that a lot of content distribution is done in a traditional way is very wasteful and expensive.
The composability part of it is super important for people to understand, because your audience now has a wallet tied to their identity. They can take that wallet anywhere it's supported, which is, I mean, in Web3, that's pretty much everywhere, especially if you're like an EV, if you're an EVM chain, you know, it can be pretty much everywhere. Actually, the episode that launched today, Unstoppable Domains, has a really cool identity product too. You're aware of that. But like the thing that they've done is that's very interesting is you just get like your TLD, like Sandy, the COO there is sandy.nft. And when you send an asset to it, their API automatically routes it to whatever chain that asset is from. So the user does not even have to think about from the cross-chain standpoint, doesn't even have to think about it.
And think you guys, about where it's going. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys have actually achieved that with the access piece. You talked about ticketing earlier.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to lean into that, like Alluvio allows like the content creator, whether it's an enterprise or individual, you can sell tickets that allow people to access your content online. And that's on any chain that's supported. I know you support like Solana and all the EVM ones, right?
Everything. But this is a part of the content fabric I kind of skipped over early on. And it's worth knowing. So each of these content objects itself has a contract that backs it. And folks from IPFS will relate to this from a storage perspective, a version hash that is actually identifying unique content itself, its bytes, for example. That base contract in the content object does more, though, than just store its current version hash. It also provides for authorization to that content. And it can also have data, because these content objects are data and they're media and they're code, can also have data that expresses a policy. And that policy can encode requirements for the authorization. So now you've got this versioned object that's backed by an on-chain contract for which some of that data is actually a policy that governs its authorization. And what this lets you do is then codify, if you will, rules or statements so that any client that's coming in with an attestation that's signed, right, blockchain signatures coming in signed, can then be verified against that policy to say, does this coming in request actually own this NFT on this blockchain? Does this particular requester, for example, own a set of multiple sets of NFTs on a given blockchain? Another policy might be a geographic window. Does this client presenting this request resolve to a geo that is within this window policy? And with these international film releases, the requirement is that the policy be met for not only NFT ownership, but also in window geography, for example. Same thing with a live stream rewatch. Is it in the window of when the rewatch is available? The reason I'm showing all these examples is because that's a generalizable mechanism, that authorization capability. And then what we've done, as if you remember before you asked me, what kind of tooling do we give to creators? Well, we've taken advantage of these policies to make a bunch of different blockchain tools for tickets, NFT-based authorization, for example, and these kinds of creative windowing-based policies. And you can tap into any of those directly in the fabric itself without having to do anything. Cross-chain-wise, the cross-chain authorization supports everything. Ethereum mainnet, Polygon, Solana, you name it.
I mean, that's huge both for these like enterprise media companies like Warner Brothers, but also for like individual creators. You just gave
absolutely
the whole spectrum, just like granular, very granular control of how people access the content. I mean, I did not know that about the geolocation piece. That is very cool.
I know I'm talking a lot about Flash, but it just happened and I want people, it's worth knowing this. So this is the first feature film to ever been released on the blockchain, the fabric being the blockchain distribution network. It's Warner Brothers Flash. This particular release coincides with the digital release in all the countries around the world on their regular streaming services. The requirement there is that the window of availability match the availability on the standard streaming services. So how are we doing that? We're doing that through these policies in the one content object, for example, with the feature film that then is used to serve out on demand to every single streamer around the world. What's great about this? Number one, the granularity applies just on the source. So you don't have to do any work down on the clients. Super efficient. It's also great because it gives you the ability to tie directly to the encryption. So if someone's going to sign on and get access to this film, it's secure. Only a person who's actually bought ownership in it can actually stream it, decrypt, and have it re-encrypted for DRM, for example. And then the last thing that's really great, if you think about the cost model, and this is really where, you know, this huge change in CDNs come into play, is you've got one object that's serving all of those international versions, and they're dynamically built when you make your request. So if you're watching from France and somebody else is watching from the UK and somebody else is watching from Thailand, each of those international versions is actually built, if you will, to that player at the time of the request. And that saves a ton on the bytes and the storage that goes into this, which goes back to what I was saying earlier about really shifting the economics of how content's distributed just to help everybody.
Wow. I mean, we kind of said this really quickly, but that's like the big headline here is the Flash getting released simultaneously on all the other major platforms, on your platform, on the fabric. First time ever that a major motion picture has been released on chain, essentially. I mean,
that's
full
right.
Thing.
That's exactly right. And this is really interesting for people, and it's different than people might expect. First of all, Alluvio doesn't license any of the content from Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers distributes it directly to the consumers. And the consumers, in this case, are not just streamers. The consumers are blockchain owners. When you purchase the Movieverse experience, it's minted as an ERC-721, an NFT, on the Alluvio mainnet. Your wallet owns that, and the media wallet gives you the experience to watch it all. Watch the feature film, the full, you know, 2-hour 4K feature film, and to also then experience all of these extras and interactive experience with all of these unlocks in it, as well as a lot of bonus footage and also galleries. In this way, the first time it's been possible to own a new release feature film this way on chain, it's also the first time a studio has had the boldness to actually put it out in an NFT window. That's really what this is. And then finally, the media wallet. I really want to speak to this because I think it makes a lot of difference to making this mainstream. The media wallet's also available on Apple TV. So when you watch, you're not just in your browser or on your phone, but you can actually have an entertainment experience. So when you log in, you can log in with email or with MetaMask, sign on.
Oh, really? Apple TV?
On Apple TV. So we actually released right before the drop. Just a little plug for anybody thinking about the Flash. If you have an Apple TV, go to the TVOS store, download the Alluvio Media Wallet for TVOS, and you can watch it there directly. Full 4K.
That is so cool. Yeah. And if you watch it there directly, you actually own that experience. Is this like a limited supply? Are there like a number, like how many people can buy it?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And like all Web3 projects, I mean, Warner Brothers has set all of those terms. There's 2,000 of the premium edition, and I think they have 10,000 of their mystery edition. What's interesting though, is unlike, you know, what people have often thought as NFTs, these are media bundles that have, first of all, a lot of high value media, including the film. And then one other thing I really want to say, Alex, that I will commend, you know, a lot of times more traditional companies don't necessarily stretch out as much as Warner has done in this case. They actually created a whole new format of interactive experiences, which are typically built in gaming engines. In this case, the interactive was built in Unity, and it has hotspots that, first of all, it's unlocked as part of the experience. You can access it directly on your phone or directly on the browser. It runs well. A good job fabric and serving it fast. And then it has these hotspots in it that will actually play out video and extras and various AR objects. Those will load on demand. And again, all of this is only possible for the wallet holder. not anyone else, right? This is, of course, a first of a kind kind of format. They're learning, we're learning, but it really, I think, is something for folks following the space to consider part of history.
Yeah, no, it's a really big deal. I mean, I think the thing that you said that really resonated for me was the owning the experience. You guys have taken something that has really worked in Web3, which is like these limited supply, like collectible drops, you know, like it's gone really viral in Web3, these like generative drops, right? Limited supply drop. It's not generative, I don't think, right? But it's like you're selling a ticket to access NAT, or is it?
This happens to also be generative. Interestingly, what mints in both the mystery and the premium edition is variable in terms of the assets that you get inside. So yes.
You get a true collectible for the fan base.
Yes.
As long as you hold that asset in your wallet, you own access to the experience. It's a limited experience that like only you can give anyone else who's with you watching on your Apple TV access to, which is like, I mean, the in real life example that I can think of, it's like, imagine that there was a theme park of like your favorite movie and like only 10,000 people could get to have access to it. And you had to hold this pass to get access to it.
That's exactly right. And the media is integrated with the NFT. I think that's the other big break from what has been a lot of Web3, because it's, as we all know, a lot of Web3 is very awkward for people. It doesn't feel smooth. And you have to take the thing that you've gotten over here to get the thing that it, the utility it's supposed to give you. And this, it's all together. Oh, by the way, I have to tell you this. There are two redeemable offers. Those also redeem on chain dynamically when you click them. And they are redeemable only by the current wallet holder. So when you redeem them, you get back your QR code. One gives you a DC comic. The other one gives you a Fanflix discount. If you then start selling your NFT movie experience on the secondary marketplace when it opens, if you've already redeemed, the next holder will not be able to do so. It's a true on-chain redemption. If you chose not to, when you're selling it, the next holder can.
Interesting. So do you guys have like something in the UI that lets them know whether or not they,
it's been redeemed? Yeah, you can see it. Yes, you can actually see it.
It impacts the value of that, the asset probably, right? Like you're like one that still has them, you know, you can get it, you can get access to it. And there's all sorts of crazy things you could do with that too, because when you redeem something, you could give them another collectible that's randomly generated. Then you get this like lottery thing, right? Where there's a psychology. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I think this also helps people to understand why would major companies in the creative space want to experiment with this? And I think the engagement possibilities are really astounding, especially when there is a core group of people that really care enough to both watch and to also purchase. And, you know, without making it too much about the monetization, that's really the super fan that every advertiser is truly after, right? And I think that is the vector in which Web3 is going to explode with content.
Yep. Because I want to go back to one thing that you said earlier too. So, because you're touching on it here, you mentioned you didn't license the content.
No, we don't. It's Warner to audience, right?
And that is because you're just a content fabric delivering content to the end customer, and the wallet address lets them own the experience.
Correct. Correct.
And that's where it's so interesting. Right? Like it's a totally different business model.
It's a totally different business model. And the reason I want to say this is so important is it makes that purity of ownership. First of all, it makes it explicit. And secondly, it's one-to-one, just like we always know on blockchain. And I think people tend to think when it's major companies, like a major studio, it can't possibly be this way. Well, it is. If you imagine that sort of like broadening itself out to all of creative work, then you really can see where this can get us something new.
I'm going to throw like a stake in the ground here. This is like the holy grail. I really hope it works for Warner Brothers and for you guys, because this like virtuous cycle of like direct connection to the audience and like and the distribution mechanism and the like economics around it is the thing that crypto like Web3 has been searching for, this kind of application. And you guys have tied it together. Like the technologies and the economics have been tied together in a really unique way. It's very impressive.
That is all true. But what we really need, I mean, no single company is ever going to move the needle on any of this alone, right? The most important thing is awareness, people to see what it is and to become part of it and to know about it. And technology companies can only do so much in that regard. So we really, you know, appreciate everyone who wants to be part.
Well, so we're getting towards the top of the show, and I always ask this question to all my guests. What have I not asked you that I should have asked?
Oh man, you asked me a lot of great questions, but you didn't ask me about live content, You talked a little bit about Twitch in the beginning, and I want to share a little bit on this side. So one of the most interesting things, I think, is the breadth of the ranges of content that are out there. Obviously, we've got what people have thought of as sort of episodic content in movies, and we've also got music in abundance that's being now sort of experimented with on the blockchain. Of course, live content has been always the holy grail of everything because it's what's going on here and now. First of all, the one thing I would say on just the side of, yes, the fabric can do it, is it serves live content awesome, meaning globally as you serve, as you publish that stream and with very low latency. What's really up to the community of creators and audience to take advantage of is then what to do with that. Because all these principles that we've been talking about with direct engagement can be unlocked. And one of our partners, for example, is DanceFight, and they have a application that is somewhat of a competitor to TikTok. They're a new upstart. One of the goals that they have is to be able to, you know, take advantage of the technology of the fabric to be able to give direct attribution to the published, you know, dance fights, if you will, the videos, and then to also be able to have the monetization side tie back to the directly to the competitors. And most of that is live. I think that sort of thing can go everywhere. And then on the bigger media space, I think it's worth everybody listening to this to know that because there's been so much movement of live content to these kind of free and ad supported channels, right? You probably hear about those. They're going everywhere, you know, Netflix, Hulu, et cetera. Here, yet again, we need a new model so that the audience, what they're getting is actually meaningful, and it's not just a passive ad being shoved into the stream for me. And then secondly, that there is a better and frankly more economical way for the publisher to pair with that audience, even though that content is free. And we're involved in some really interesting pilots that have to do with highly personalized content in that space where the person is known by their wallet.
That's incredibly interesting. Do you have any examples you can share that are not too confidential? I would love to hear something.
Well, in our case, we're involved with some bigger broadcasters that I'm sure you would know and recognize. And one of those is Fox, of course, who's involved in our company. I think that this model applies obviously across the bigger streamers. And of course, Fox owns Tubi, for example, but it can, I think, and this is why it's important to have a platform that, you know, scales and is economic, it can go to everybody, meaning that you can open it up so it isn't just about the monster streaming services, that it can also unlock this kind of live distribution for any upstart or creator.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where my head went too. I mean, even something, again, for like my show, like I have to work hard to get sponsorship and fund the show. And
totally,
if I have a good audience and you can tell in detail who they are and get them, because I also am selective. Like I don't want to have just anybody that I don't even run like automated ads or anything like that. I just have one sponsor right now. And this could potentially like give them personalized, it's personalized revenue for me essentially, right? Like it's personalized ads for them, but it's also personalized to my audience, which is personalized revenue, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And I think then advertising goes beyond what it has traditionally been. It can be much more creative, much more engaging. And really what you want is the relationship, right, with that particular person or wallet. And I think this is a whole new unlock for people. Lastly, it does a ton of good to like bring down the situation of the open bad internet that, you know, has frankly led to a lot of abuse of people's identities, right?
Yep. Thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been super interesting. Wish you the best of luck with this, the launch with the Flash. And if you're listening to this, where can they go and actually try to buy some of these experiences?
So the Flash is hosted by Warner Brothers on the Alluvio platform at web3.wb.com. So go check it out.
That's easy to remember. We'll put that in the show notes, web3.wb.com. All right. Thanks so much for being here today.
Bye-bye.
You just heard the Index podcast with your host, Alex Kahaya. If you enjoyed this episode, please give the show a 5-star rating and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite streaming platform. New episodes available every other Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in.